sharing your story.
Hi, my name is Stephanie Matahari. It's like 20 to 30 minutes, right? Can you make me a sign at 25 something?
Okay, it's the first time I share, like, here, and you are all there watching at me. So I'm a bit nervous, but I'm glad. I'm sorry for my English, which is not perfect, but I'm going to do. Just share my experience, strength, and hope for tonight. What happened? What it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I've had like a really classical random childhood. Nothing really serious happened to me when I was a child. I had two parents, a sister. I've been brought up in next to Paris in France, like a guest. We had no money issues. I had no school issues. I had friends. I had a lot of activities. I loved dancing. I loved doing like many stuff. But what is weird is that I don't really have good impression or good memory of my childhood and teenage. Even though when I read the letters or I see the videos, I'm like, oh yeah, I look pretty happy on that. And what I wrote is like, but what I remember really strongly is also kind of atmosphere of tension between my parents who now are divorced. And a lot of, we didn't say things between us, like we didn't talk. My parents really did their best to give all what they could give to us. But talking was not their main, you know, characteristic, I guess. And I can give you an example. Like I tried to, when I was 16, I tried to kill myself. And it's a big jump between happy childhood and societal teenagehood. And my parents even didn't talk about that together. My mother told me that after, and I'm like, okay. And my sister has been hospitalized. My sister is 3 years older than me, and she's been anorexic. She weighed like 30 kilos, and we never talked about that. We just, things happened, and we went through it, and we just, like, we function really well in my family. And I'm very different from that. They work pretty well in their affairs. I don't work that way. They're not alcoholics. My sister has been through anorexia, but she's not, I don't think she's really an addict. And no one is an addict in my family. Everybody loves wine. I did. I really enjoyed wine. And the first drink I had was, I think I was 8, and it was like my grandpa's birthday, and I asked him, can I have champagne? And he was talking, and he was like, yeah, sure. It was like that, and there was a big glass, like, you know, a glass for water, not for champagne. It just kept on, you know, pouring my glass, and I had like 2 like that, and I passed out at 8. I just blacked out. And my sister too, I think. Yeah, my sister too. But I just love champagne. My family, my older grandpa is, he always has like maybe 5 bottles of wine, in different wines in his fridge. And he can talk for hours about it. And I wanted to be to work in wine industry. I wanted to be, you know, to have the knowledge and the subtle knowledge and the subtle, you know, way of drinking. It didn't happen that way. But it's a big part of my family's identity, like the good things you can eat and the good wines and the good coffee, you know, the good things in life, and wine is part of that. So I started to drink more heavily at 14 with my friends at college. I felt inferior. I was in a college where there was a lot of money, a lot of cool, wealthy people, and a lot of drugs. Well, compared to other places, maybe not. But for me, it was like too much money, too much using, and too much sex for 15 years old people. And I wanted to hang around with these cool people, but I didn't feel at ease. So I would drink more and smoke more, and when I started to drink like in parties every weekend, I blacked out like really easily, and I would cry. I had the sad drinking. So I was in my kind of romantic period, like, no, let me, at the end of the parties, trying to grab attention, probably subconsciously, I didn't think, but I had, like, suicidal behaviors. I would sit, like, on the roofs of buildings, drunk and crying, maybe waiting for guys to come and save me, or I don't know. That kind of worked for a while, and then it didn't work really well. But that's how it started. I remember that we moved from our apartment when I was 17, and we had a short period of time where we were like all my family. We all lived in different places, waiting for the next apartment, and I was living alone like for a few months, and I started to buy alcohol on my own like at 17 and drink on my own at night, and then I started to drink my parents' wine. They have this I don't know what's the name in un cubi in French. It's like a big box, and you just do like that, and wine is, and you don't see the level. Really great stuff, you don't see the level. So I could like drink, instead of having a hot chocolate, I had wine, but not really on a daily basis at that time. I had a food disorder from 16. It's been a part of my big part of my disease as well. When my sister came back from hospital for anorexia, I started mine, and it's been really active at the beginning, and then I put more and more alcohol, and I mixed both. And I remember I stopped smoking at 18. I can't understand how I didn't go back to smoking, but I drank and ate like twice as more as before. But I never went back to smoking. And gradually, from age 18 to age 21, I started to drink more and more on my own, or in bars. I would think all the time. I would put a lot of pressure on myself in my studies. It's been a really privileged field of my life. That's how my dad basically would give me like rewarding or not rewarding, let's say, through studies. So it's been really important to me to have good grades. I was like really good student, good girl, da da da. But I was just thinking of where I'm gonna drink after class, or how could I hide the bottle in my bag. Gradually, it came into my studies as well. Like at the end, I would like just bring alcohol at school, at university, at school, and drink between classes, being drunk in a class. The only class I've been really drunk into, I discovered after that my teacher is in AA. It's the only teacher who is in AA, and she noticed that I was drunk in her class. Maybe subconsciously I guessed it. I don't know. Alcohol has come more and more in more and more of my affairs, in my work, in my internships, in my studies, in my friendships, in my love relationships. I had boyfriends for 3 years, from 17 to 20, and like it's been a big issue between us. For the New Year's Eve on the new century, I blacked out and I peed in bed with him, which was really humiliating for me. But it's just a kind of detail. It hurts my dignity a lot, and all these shames I had, like coming back home and not knowing where I come from, like waking up in the morning not knowing how I got back home. Where is my cell phone? Lost. Where is my key? Lost. Looking at the bruise on my body to see what happened, to try to guess, trying to find some clues to know what happened, you know. Or sometimes I would wake up in places I even didn't know where I was. I've put myself in a lot of vulnerable situations. A cop found me with 4 grams, 8 in the blood, in Paris. I could have been like raped or beaten like really thousands of times in my life. I think it didn't happen. But you know, I've put myself in great danger, and I'm really blessed I'm still here. I've tried to stop drinking a lot. I've seen a therapist from age 16 to age 23. I'm 25 now. And I tried a lot of different stuff. I tried all kinds of medication, antidepressants, anti-anxiety, antipsychotic, anti-epileptic, because maybe it could prevent my compulsion behaviors. Nothing worked on me. Actually depressed me more than something else, anything else. But I mean, sometimes I would stop like 2 months and then got my exams, passed my exams, and then drink again. Sometimes I would apply for a humanitarian mission in Burkina Faso and go there, believing it would really be a good idea to sober up there, or in the plane even. And that's not a good idea. Don't try to withdraw in the plane. And actually, like, my alcoholism would, of course, come back there in pretty miserable way. In Latvia as well, I've done that. And what happened, how did I meet AA? I've been 3 times to psychiatric hospitals. And once a doctor introduced me to AA, and I read the Living Sober in one night, in two hours at night. And it kind of, you know, the seed was planted. And it took me 14 more. I went there, but I don't know how, but I managed to convince myself that maybe, even after knowing AA, I kind of convinced myself that maybe I could try to drink normally. And I convinced my psychiatrist, my sister, and it didn't work. It worked for 2 months, and then I was back to heavy drinking. And it's a time where I would go to restaurants on my own and eat and drink on my own. And first I started, I paid, and then I didn't pay anymore because I didn't have any more money, so I would run away. I have a lot of amends to make still in Paris. And so it took me like 40 months to sober up since I knew AA. And in October 2005, I kind of really realized that it wasn't a game anymore, basically. Like, it wasn't like a way of trying to grab my dad's attention anymore. It wasn't a teenage crisis anymore. It was really a question of life or death for me, and I had to choose between life or death, because I was really about to kill myself, really. So I really rushed, even if I was really intoxicated, really. I could even not drink water anymore at the time. I would drink water and then go and throw up. My body was really fucked up. But I really decided at that moment, like, either I kill myself now, or I take a plane and go to South America, and I would probably kill myself there. And I don't want to withdraw in the, like, leave the withdrawal in the plane. Or I give myself a real chance, and I knew. So that's why I said the seed was planted, that the only real chance for me was AA. And was AA stopping my studies, like, really, just AA, basically, just doing AA every day. And so I decided that. I asked my mother to lock me in her apartment, and she was living in a, she had left my dad. She was living in a studio on the 8th, yes, there's 8th, and I was afraid to jump. But I was more afraid to go out and drink than to jump. So I told her, you just lock me in, and we will see, you know. And I couldn't even drink water. I'm like, she's a doctor. I could have died with this withdrawal, but, you know, it's been my way of dealing with that. And I didn't want to go to hospitals anymore, because we don't have, like, treatment centers like here in France. And so in hospitals, you can't have AA meetings. So I just, and I know, like, for me, hospitals is medication and regression. And when I go out, I'm like a baby. I'm like a baby going back to drugs. So that's how I started, and I stopped everything, and I did AA for, like, every day. At first, I was really critical to, something important happened. It's like, it was in November, 2005, there was the 45th anniversary of AA in France, and it was close to Paris, so I've been there, and I was with all these people, like, in this big room. Well, it's much more smaller than here, but it was really big for me, I guess, like, holding their hands and like, clapping really loud for the newcomers, and I was maybe 10 days sober. So I was really crying, and it's been really important, and really remember that. And I started AA in a French meeting. I took service. I took the literature service, and I was like, I want to choose my tools. I don't want a God. I don't want a sponsor. I just want literature and meetings. That's all. I don't want phone calls. And I, little by little, I realized that if I wouldn't take another tool, I would go back to drinking. Basically, that was really like that. So that's how I accepted to ask someone to sponsor me. And the same for service. I must say that service has really saved my ass a lot of times, really. I'm sure I wouldn't be in AA anymore if they hadn't been service. Because I don't know if it's pride or if it's just a healthy behavior, but if I commit to do something, I learned in AA to be trustworthy. for what I committed for. And that's, so that's why service is really helping me a lot. And I've been through the steps. I'm at my rhythm, like slow rhythm. I'm used to doing things fast and really effectively, and I didn't want to do the steps like, well, my sponsor knew it wouldn't be a good idea for me to rush on steps. And so it took me a year to do my first step. We would meet every week, and she was unemployed at that time, which was great. She had a lot of time to give me, and now she has a job, so that's, you know, life. And now I'm on my step 6. It's going to be 3 years in 3 weeks, I guess. I'm sober. Every year, it's been really challenging before my anniversary. There is this kind of syndrome. I don't know if you guys have that, but I know some people. I've heard some people share that, like before your first anniversary. And for me, it's been also before my second, and now before my third one. I kind of freak out. Like, I don't know why, but I tend to negotiate with my step one just before the anniversary, you know, like tempting the devil before the big stuff. And I did that last year in Argentina. I've traveled before sobering up and after. It's been a really important part of my recovery to go to AA abroad. Like, I've been there in Italy, in Spain, no, not in Spain, in England. Even if I didn't get a word in Kent, for example, I really didn't get a word. In Argentina, here, and it, in New York City, it really gives me, like, the conscience and of the this global net, this, like, global safety for me. So in Argentina, I kind of lost the fear of alcohol, and I didn't really worry about that. And hopefully the fear came back. I had a kind of panic attack in the plane. It's always in the plane, but it happens. And even now, it's like my third anniversary is coming soon, and the fear was less intense of alcohol, and I need to feel that fear. That's why I'm discovering more and more these months in Montreal that as time passes, I don't need less meetings. I thought that the more time would pass, the less meetings I would need. But maybe I would go to many meetings to be, you know, helpful and great, like to express my gratitude and, you know. And no, actually, it's like I really, really need to hear newcomers, to hear old timers, to be of service. It's basically like my medication. Taking care of myself is also a really big part, like physically, emotionally, spiritually. Exercise, sleep, what I eat is really important in my recovery. If I had known that I would really need AA for my whole life, maybe I wouldn't have stayed. But I didn't know, and now I'm here, and it's like, I remember when I came in, I told people, like, I don't want to live just for living. I can kill myself. I'm not afraid of that. I want a good life, you know. I really want a good life. And I think I have a good life. I think I'm very lucky. I think I have really great family who has, they suffered a lot from my disease. My sister has been suffering a lot. She had confronted me in my disease, and which helped me a lot, because no one would confront me really, and she did, and it helped me a lot. But I mean, what I live, like coming here to have this internship in Montreal, meeting all these people in AA, most of them, but also people outside of AA, living all these experiences. Of course, I have like really hard times. And I did hurt my body a lot in the disease, and now I have the consequences to assume. So I have another kind of chronic disease that may be a result of my addiction, or maybe a cause, I don't know, but it's like I have other issues, but the way of life that A gives me is the reason why I'm still here, you know? It's really like that. It's really radical when I say that, like, that someone recently asked me, what is the most important thing on... It's like the questions your friend asked you, do you prefer to be deaf and with an amputation, or a blind and really, really overweight? You know, these kind of stupid questions people ask, and I'm like, let me think about that. And he asked me, like, do you prefer, who is the most important on earth for you? And I kind of picked up like three people, and there was my sponsor in it. And the, as far as communities or groups of groups are concerned, A is really the most important thing for me. That's all. You could like take away everything from me, but not A. You know, it's really like that. And it does give me hope and love. It's not just surviving. It's not just a way of getting an identity I didn't have outside. It's not just like that. It does sometimes. It helps, but it's really, it's so deep. It's so, my sponsor tells me it's like a spiral. Can I say spiral? Yeah. Recovery is like a spiral. It's like you think you go back on the same level, but you don't. You're like on another level. You go through kind of, you think you go through the same issues, but it's, you have another level of an understanding. It's not better, it's not, but it's another level of, you know, and it's just a mode d'emploi. So yeah, it's like a guide to live for me. Yeah, it's really like that. As if I heard a speaker, and he would say like there's no. I thought everybody had a book in life to tell them how to function, you know, but they forgot for me. And it's really like that for me. Like every issue I can go through, or every even happy moments, anything, I can apply the way of life that A gives me in it. I've discovered spirituality, which is a really core part of my recovery. Humility, like all these kind of concepts I had no clue about before coming in. I thought it was just church things, and I was against church. To be honest, I'm discovering now that I'm discovering that I'm more sick than I thought I was. Because I thought that when you withdraw alcohol, little by little it's getting better. Actually, it's not really working like that. It's just getting different. It's just, it's much better. There's no comparison between both. But there are other issues that are coming on my way, and I have the deep intuition that my higher power does put on my way the things I'm able to deal with at the right moment, really. Even though at the moment I think I really can't deal with that, but it's always been like that. Like when it, for example, depression, in my first few months of sobriety, I couldn't deal with depression. So I was just big, like manic. I would spend my time in theaters. I would go to movies like 5 times a week, I think. I would be always doing something. I couldn't just be. I just couldn't welcome emotions of sadness. It was really too intense for me. And now, sometimes I have these feelings. When I can experience them and go through them, I'm pretty grateful sometimes, because my first tendency is to want to use on that and not feeling them. So it's like all these tiny steps, all these baby steps I'm going through. As Hillary said, like, we both arrived at the same time in Montreal, and I've really appreciated the groups here and the people, and there's really, I have a feeling to be really welcomed in a here, and once more service is saving my hat every time, and I know I'm going to cry a lot in 3 weeks when I'm going to take my chip for my third year, like every year, because I'm really deeply grateful for sobriety, you know. I'm always amazed to realize that I can be really insane at some moments, but there's always this tiny intuition that tells me that it's worth going through it. Or if you go, maybe sometimes I'm really suicidal, but if you go to an AA meeting, it's going to be better. Just, you know, just wait, just go through it. And yeah, I guess I'm also really grateful that there are, I've been to the to both meetings tonight, the sober one and this one. And I really love that, like, by the book meetings. Like, my home group in Paris is a big book meeting. I just need this safety and this to hear people talk about their spirituality and how they live the way of life. That's what I need, really. And I really love the fact that it's a lifetime process. So from the moment I stay teachable, I stay open to improve myself. It's like really honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. It's like really for me the core of what I can hope in AA is really based on that. And I think that's all I want to say for tonight, and I really appreciate to be here and sharing that with you. So thank you. Thank you.